the biggest thing with the planter is the savings in seed cost. Canola seed is extremely expensive, as every producer knows, and I have now cut my rate in half. On my farm, that's a pretty tremendous saving.
Knowledge for Resilience, a cross-commodity podcast brought to you jointly by the Peace River Forage Association, the Peace Region Forage Seed Association, the BC Grain Producers Association, and the Northern Cohort. Welcome to episode 23. I'm your host, Nadia Mori. Today, I'm talking with Evan Keane, a Peace Region producer who likes to challenge himself with on-farm trials. In a recent project, Evan converted a corn planter into a canola planter. Evan and I jokingly talked about how this episode was 8 months in the making, mostly because Evan was simply busy doing farmer things. The delay ended up working quite in your favor, as Evan was now able to share two growing season results instead of just one, of using his canola planter. If you are a canola grower or simply interested in the technology of a canola planter, you definitely don't want to miss this episode, as Evan walks you through his process and some pretty cool results. Without further ado, let's get planting. Today, I get to talk to Evan Keane. Evan, welcome to the podcast.
Hello there.
To get us started, I think for folks listening who may or may not know you, if you could maybe just give us a bit of a background, where you're located and how you got into farming.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of my history, I guess. I grew up in a small town in southern Manitoba on a farm, grain and cattle. I've been in BC since 2006, but no, I didn't start in agriculture when I come here, or farming for that matter. I worked in oil and gas and logging in a couple different industries before I decided that I should farm here. The farm I grew up on, I guess, was anywhere from 1,800 to 2,500 acres of grain, and we had 350 cows, if I remember right. It's been quite a while since those days, but that was back in the 90s. So I kind of grew up in the environment of only agriculture. My wife and I bought this property we're on now. I live just northwest of town, about 20 minutes of Fort St. John. We bought this property in 2012, and it's kind of surrounded by farmland, and I got the itch to farm again, so we've been growing a little bit every year to what we are today.
That story sounds not too unfamiliar to other stories I've heard where somebody grew up farming, you had to go a little bit away, and then it kind of got back to you and you got back into it.
Yeah, it's inside a person. I think once you grow up with it, something usually brings you back most of the time.
And the operation you're running today, could you just describe a little bit what you're growing and how large you're growing?
So our current operation right now is, or going into next spring, is we have 1,800 acres approximately of grain. I grow barley and canola and oats sometimes. Is my main commodities. I have about 800 acres of hayland, and we have 250 bred cows at the moment is our operation.
I was just kind of thinking, like, you grew up farming, and I'm sure things have changed, and you have changed, and your approach to farming has changed. So, you know, kind of what are the things you've maybe adapted on your operation that are your own approach?
I think one of the biggest differences from when I left the farm or left Manitoba, it was a 10-year period probably where I wasn't involved in agriculture. So getting back into it, there a lot of things had changed. Technology, equipment, marketing options, I guess, also. So it was, although I grew up on a farm and knew how to do the basic operation of it, it was like starting over from scratch, you know, just trying to learn or get up to speed, I guess, with what was happening in the 2000s, right, or the 2010s versus the 90s when there was no GPS and there was not much for technology.
And how was that for you with all this new technology and everything? Were you one who kind of embraced it? Did you find it handy? Were there some things that were kind of tricky to work around?
When I just started on my own, it was pretty small scale, and I had the old school mentality where I don't need the technology and I don't need to spend the money on that, and I know how to drive in a straight line. And I started kind of just with that approach, doing it the old way or the way I knew how to do it. And slowly, you know, I got a GPS unit and quickly transitioned to the technology afterwards as we started to grow, just for the efficiency and the ease of the process, I guess you could say, compared to the 90s. So it was an easy decision to transition into the new way of doing things once I started.
One of those technologies that you've adopted is using a canola planter. Do you want to just lead us a bit into that project?
Yeah, that's quite a project. I'll tell you how it kind of all began. Several years ago, because of our livestock, I wanted to try growing corn in Fort St. John for my cattle, only because, you know, they grow corn everywhere else, and I kind of think if they can grow it, why can't I? So I bought myself a corn planter that actually came from Manitoba, and I did a couple trials of corn, which I feel were mostly successful. Probably going to try it again in the future. It didn't mature as much as I wanted it to, just because we ran out of weather. But I think with the technology and varieties and growing conditions, I think it will work in the future. But anyway, I did that for a couple of years, and we got into a year where we had lots of feed, and I didn't need to grow corn. I didn't need a supplement feed source, so I didn't grow corn for a couple of years, and I thought, well, I got this planter here, I might as well try and sell it, because I wasn't using it. I can always get a different one later on. So I phoned my brother in Manitoba, and I asked him, because he's in corn country there, I asked him if he knew of anybody that was looking for a corn planter, because I was going to sell mine. And his exact words were, why don't you keep it and convert it to a canola planter? And at that point, I hadn't really done the research or the homework on canola planters, and he proceeded to tell me about how people were transitioning, or they were starting to use them quite a bit there, and the results, and I started, you know, watching videos and making phone calls and asking people how their crops were doing compared to conventional methods, and got some pretty positive feedback. So I thought, why not? Let's give it a try. We'll convert this thing to a canola planter and be the first one up here to try it. That's how the canola planter originated.
Did you do the conversion yourself? Was it pretty techy?
It wasn't, actually. The planter that I have is very, very old. It's in the 90s, I guess, which is getting very, very old. It's a very basic, all mechanical, very little technology to it. Compared to what they are today, it's very old school. So it was fairly simple to convert. All I had to do was add four row units, and then they do make a canola disc conversion kit for these older planters. So it was just a little time. I don't know, it took us a couple of weeks and a bunch of money, and we had it converted over to canola.
Now, you could have also bought the canola planter, which I suspect would have been quite a bit more of an investment.
That's the difference. A very high-tech, new or almost new planter is at least $500,000. And I wasn't quite prepared to spend that or invest that into a trial that I didn't know was going to work, if it was going to work or not. I was pretty confident it was going to work because people are doing it elsewhere, but I still, on my operation, can't afford that huge investment or that gamble. So I think it cost me about $9,000 to convert mine, which is quite a difference and quite affordable compared to having to buy something.
Yes.
I think with the results I'm getting as I keep growing, I probably will invest. Maybe not that much money, but I will invest into a bigger, more techy planter at some point. But for now, this one's working pretty good.
Just remind me, when did you get started with the canola planter?
So this crop year that we just finished was my second year with the planter. Spring of 21 was my first trial with it. The first year, spring seeding, obviously I knew very little about using a planter and was going off what other people were telling me, and I was trying to determine what was going to be the best rate to seed. I should actually go into a little detail the difference between a planter and an air seeder. Air seeder basically delivers seed and product on a volume basis. So it augers out of the tank or feeds out of the tank and is distributed through all of the hoses with air. And where a planter picks up one individual kernel at a time, places it in the ground, one tiny little seed at a time. So it's very, very precise. Instead of, you know, on a drill, they might be augering 5 pounds per acre of bulk product into the tubes, where my planter is picking up one kernel or one seed at a time and dropping it in the ground. They're quite different in that sense. So back to spring of 21, I am trying to determine what rate I need to seed and what spacing I want for my individual seeds. And so I decided to try 3 different rates. I try a really low rate, a medium rate, and a high rate. And I think I ended up planting about 400 or 500 acres, 600 acres maybe, the first spring. I was only going to do a quarter section and as a trial, but things were going well and the weather was good and I just kept planting. So the gamble got bigger and bigger as I went along. So the first field I planted, it was actually pretty early at the end of April. I was shooting for 2 pounds of seed per acre. That's roughly 200,000 seeds per acre. With a planter, it goes in seeds per acre instead of pounds. My target was about 2 pounds. And kind of got it set and did some calibrations and thought it was right around the 2 pound mark. But when I got to the end of the field and counted the bags, I actually had planted that field at 1.75 pounds, which is extremely, extremely light for canola. So I did the calibration on the next field and got it back into my 3 pound mark or two and three quarter, I think I was trying for. And then the last couple fields I did at 3.5 pounds. So I would have some data for the next year to see which way I wanted to go. And I was actually quite surprised on that field that I planted at 1.75 pounds. I was tempted to redo it actually because I thought it was going to be way too light. And it looked really sparse when it was coming out of the ground. And I was humming and hawing. I thought, you know, this is a trial. I'm going to leave that, see what it does in comparison. It was a big field, which made me nervous. But anyway, that field that I planted on year one at 1.75 pounds, I had the weigh wagon come out. And in the best part of the field, I got a weight of 62 bushels an acre on 1.75 pounds of seed. The whole field over on an average averaged about 54 bushels an acre.
Wow.
Which in my opinion on that much seed is a bumper crop. So I was pleasantly surprised when I harvested that one and I was worried about it all year long, thinking there wasn't going to be anything there, but it shocked a lot of people and myself as to what that plant actually did when it had that kind of room to grow. So now if I compared that to my 2.5 pounds, was pretty similar in growth and yield. The stuff I seeded at 3.5 pounds was actually less yield than the stuff I seeded really light or planted really light. That kind of gave me a benchmark for this past year as to where I wanted to be for my seed rate. And this year I did every acre. I did 1,100 acres or 1,000 acres with the planter. And I just went at 2.25 pounds right in the middle of those two. And I had some amazing crops again this year with the planter. So I'm definitely going to use it again.
That's a very significant input reduction on the seed side of things for sure.
The biggest thing with the planter is the savings in seed cost. Canola seed is extremely expensive, as every producer knows. And I have now cut my rate in half. Well, on my farm, that's a pretty tremendous saving.
And on top of that, I would say you had some great variability between the 2 years where you tried it in terms of weather and how the season progressed.
Year one was pretty well a drought, actually. It was quite dry. The stuff that I seeded early at the really low rate, it got some timely rains in the spring. But for the most of the summer, it was quite dry. And, you know, even on a low plant stand, it survived that drought very, very well. Now, is that because there wasn't many plants drinking the water or is there some other science behind it? I don't know. But it, and even this year too, was quite dry. And all of my planter canola survived that drought or did very well in the drought or in the dry condition. So in my opinion, I think that lower plant stand in those past couple of years in those conditions, my opinion only, I believe with the smaller, lower plant stand or lower plants per square foot, they do better in a dry condition. Now, some agronomists might disagree or have a different opinion, and I'd be curious to have their opinions, but that's what I have seen and witnessed in the past couple of years. It's done very well in dry conditions.
Now, you mentioned the possibility that it's competition that brings that advantage. Do you have any other ideas, or do you think that's sort of the main suspect of why it's doing better?
I believe it's competition, yeah, plant competition. I have had a few areas in the field where I maybe had an issue with one of my rows where my seed disc come loose and it leaked a tremendous amount of seed out on the ground or was putting on the wrong rate. And I can visibly see that row in my field where there's a lot of plants in one row. It hardly grows. You know, you can see the dip or the line in the whole length of the field until I fixed it. So competition is, in my opinion, one of the main reasons why it's thriving. My planter precisely puts a seed every 2 inches if I want to put it at 2 inches. And when I go to a higher rate, they're getting down to half inch. So now you have essentially those two plants within a half an inch versus plants that are 2 inches. Plants that are farther apart are doing tenfold better than the ones that are at a half inch together. And again, that's competition, I suppose.
How about disease? Do you think that would also be a benefit if they're farther apart? Or would you have more of a risk of, like, if you're losing a bunch of plants, there wouldn't be any other ones to take their place? But then I guess they would be similarly affected by any disease coming in, or insect.
Well, insects are the biggest issue here. You really have to change your management a little bit and pay close attention to flea beetles and insects, because now I have a plant every 2 inch, and I'm planting on a 15 inch space, where some guys, you know, are seeding with a drill at 9 inch space, and they have 20 plants per square foot, and I only have 7. So the bugs can eat my 7 a whole lot quicker than they can eat the neighbor's 20. So I really have to pay attention to bugs, because I don't want to lose, or I can't afford to lose any plants per square foot. So it does take a little bit more management, but I also spend half as much on seed. So there is kind of a trade-off there, right? In the 2 years I haven't had to spray for bugs, I have had them, but my plants grew quick enough that they outgrew the bugs. There was a little damage, but not enough to justify spraying. And I don't think it hurt them.
Do you think that could also have been advantage of the plants, because they had less competition, they were able to grow quicker and stronger, and thereby kind of overcome any insect pressure?
I think it's very plausible that that has a lot to do with it. Once they come out of the ground, they really seem to take off. So a lot of that is weather too, right? And moisture and conditions. So it's not all in the plant.
Did you make any other adjustments, like with the lower seeding rate? Did that also affect your other inputs that went in?
It did. I do run, I don't know what everybody runs for fertilizer, but I run on the lower end of what's recommended, only because I don't think I need as much, because I'm not feeding as many plants. Again, agronomists might disagree, but I've done it 2 years in a row. I run on the low scale of what is recommended for canola, and I'm getting the yield. So in 2 years of me doing this, I'm not going to change my fertilizer application, because I don't feel like I need more. So again, my inputs on that side, I believe, are a bit lower than, again, I don't know what everybody's doing, but from what is recommended, I believe I'm saving a little money there too.
As far as I can tell, there's not too many people using a canola planter or even a converted corn planter. Do you think there will be a change on the horizon as people catch on to the potential benefit that they could gain?
I definitely think you're going to see more of them. I know there is one in Dawson Creek. I heard there's another one coming in that area. Just he's watching the neighbor's canola. But I do get lots of people asking questions. But on a big operation, it's going to be an independent thing, obviously, whether, you know, seed drills are darn expensive and planters are really expensive. And you still need a seed drill for cereals. So, you know, some people can't justify having both. I do think you're going to see more, but I don't know that they're going to explode into the countryside. You know, if people find a more affordable one, you can still run both and hopefully justify it. But I do know that it saves money.
Now you got 2 years under your belt with your project and trials. Do you foresee anything that you'll change moving forward, or you're just going to do more of what worked?
I did actually just recently here, I bought another planter, and it's basically identical to the one that I have now, but it's bigger. So I am going to use what I have and convert this one, the new one I bought, into basically the exact same thing I have, just a little wider, just to get over the ground a little quicker, but still staying with the old technology and not spending a whole lot of money. Yeah, I am kind of moving forward. I'm just going bigger, but not necessarily into the high-tech planter. I intend on seeding or planting all of my canola with the planter next year. I did do a couple wet fields this spring, just broadcasted them because they were too wet for the planter and I was impatient, which I shouldn't have been, because they didn't turn out very well compared to the planter stuff right beside it. I definitely is in my program again for next year and for the foreseeable future, I guess.
It seems like you quite naturally, you know, were able to set up some sort of a trial for yourself, like you had the 3 different seeding rates, and then, you know, use the observations to make adjustments going forward. If other producers and growers are kind of looking to try out some things on their farm, and you just said, like, it's really risky, right? And you probably had a lot of sleepless nights in that first year where you leaned in pretty good. So I'm just wondering if other producers are maybe having some ideas and they might like to try something, what sort of nuggets of advice would you have for them?
I would say if you're looking at trying different seeding rates, I can guarantee you that lower seeding rates work in canola. Seed placement and the way you do it is obviously critical, but I don't think they should be scared to try because I know it works. One thing I would like to do, and I haven't done it because I haven't had a seed drill until this year, is a side-by-side trial with a drill in the same field at a low seeding rate. So at my 2.5 pounds, I would like to do a trial with my planter and a seed drill side-by-side and get the yield data and watch it grow for the summer and just to compare at the low seeding rate. That's one thing I would like to do, and I have no issue sharing my experience. I don't know if I've done it the right way or the wrong way. I have people asking me all the time, what I'm doing, and I have no problem sharing. I now know that it works, and it would be good if other people try it too. I feel good about the planter. It works, and it's unfortunate new ones are so expensive so that more people couldn't do it. But I think over time here, as they start to get some used ones in the marketplace, that it might become more affordable for other producers. And or, they can do what I did and do it the old school way. But it depends on the farm size, if they got time to mess around with it or not. But it does save money and it does work. And it's a pretty good feeling when you can put in that small amount of seed and get a decent crop out of it at the end. And it's fairly enjoyable when you're harvesting it. I guess that might be another question some people would have is, how does it harvest? How does it swath? How does it combine? Because I'm essentially on row crop. I'm on 15-inch space, so there is quite a bit of room. Swathing, I think it's more of a variety specific on how they swath. Year one, I had a little trouble with one variety swathing, but it was also 6 feet tall. It was a tremendous crop. Harvesting, it harvests beautiful. There's lots of big stem, but it goes through the combine pretty nice. I wouldn't say there's much difference between a seed and a planter as far as swathing and harvesting, variety specific. Yeah, harvesting is, it works very well. I have found in 2 years. Obviously, I'm going to work more years into the program or into the trial too, but so far it's been really good.
And this may be a silly question, but you mentioned it was a hardier stem that went through. So did you have any changes in the residue afterwards, or that didn't really make a difference?
There wasn't a lot of residue. It seemed to break up and distribute on the land really nicely. Some big crops, you might have lumps and extra residue. Because I'm only 7 plants per square foot, but my stems are big versus 20 plants, that adds up to a pile of residue, right? I haven't had any complaints on residue. It's distributed nicely and chopped up, and it's worked very well.
So it sounds like a win-win-win scenario.
It has been the past couple of years. I'd say the biggest risk is the beetles. You really got to watch the bugs, but that's management and paying attention to your fields.
So what you did there was just upped up your monitoring?
Yep, you just keep a closer eye on it or a really, really close eye on it, and don't be afraid to spray if the bugs are getting too bad. That would be my biggest advice, is you just got to really watch until that bug stage is gone. And after that, it just grows like crazy on a typically perfect weather year, if we ever get that. I'm still waiting for that. However, it was a pretty nice fall, so we can't complain.
Well, it sounds like there's more interesting stuff coming as you keep trying things and have a bit of a bigger planter for next year. So I certainly wish you all the best with that.
Yeah, I'm hoping it works out as good as the past couple of years. So then I'm going to have to find another trial to do. Maybe I'll have to do a corn trial again if we can find a variety that maybe likes the north a little better.
Were you doing silage corn or even standing grazing corn?
We were doing grazing corn. The first year I put it in, I didn't even put it near the cows. I was just growing it to see if it would grow. And then the second year I put it close to where the cattle are. We did graze 50 acres of it, and it lasted quite a while, and the cattle did good on it. It needs a lot of water, and it's a little bit trickier to grow. It's fairly costly. We had 200 pairs in 50 acres there for all of a month. We'd supplement them a little bit of hay. So, a month of not feeding, we typically feed 6 or 7 bales a day. And I think we were feeding 1 bale a day for a month. So that saved us 5 bales a day for 30 days. It's quite a savings on the hay side. And the corn is also good for them. So year two on the corn, I think, was a success. I didn't get the full cob on the corn, but I got 50% of it. And the cows ate her right to the dirt. So I think it was a success in my mind.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, that, yeah, sounds like you got some other project ideas right there.
Yeah, so if we, I'm not sure if we'll try corn again or maybe soybeans or something. Well, I always like to be challenging myself on different things, and we'll find something to try.
Well, I sure appreciate your time and sharing your insights and observations, and I do believe some people will find some value in this.
Again, I'm not, if anybody's thinking of it, I'm not against sharing any of my experience, whether it's right or wrong. If anybody wants to ask questions about it, they can get in touch with me. It'd be good to see a few more of them in the area and people trying it out and benefiting from the cost savings.
That's right, yeah. And see how it works on their operation, because like you said, it worked. This is how it worked on your operation, which might be different for somebody else.
Well, and the weather is a big factor, obviously. And even in our small little area here, my weather is different from my neighbor 20 miles away. And then 20 more miles, his weather's different too. So it seems in the past few years, it's been so scattered all over that, yeah, maybe what they typically get is this would work good for them. I'd be curious to try it anyway.
Well, thanks so much, Evan.
We'll be in touch.
Welcome back. As Evan indicated, he is more than happy to share his project work with fellow producers who might be interested in giving a canola planter a try. Next up is a chat with Peter Lundgaard, a Peace Region forage seed producer who specializes in the production of yellow blossom alfalfa, known for its longevity and extreme winter hardiness. If you like to seed your forage stand once and then be done with it, you don't want to miss this interview. If you found value in this or other episodes of our Knowledge for Resilience podcast series, please share with your friends, families, colleagues all across the globe. You can find us on various podcast platforms, including Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, or, of course, the Partner Association websites. Wherever you tune in from, make sure you like, subscribe, hit the bell, or follow us so you never miss another episode. Funding for this project was kindly provided by the BC Hydro Peace Agricultural Compensation Fund. Thank you so much for making this project possible and supporting local agriculture in the Peace and beyond. For feedback or suggestions on other great Peace Region-related agricultural topics, please email us at coordinator@peaceforage.bc.ca. Until next time, stay informed, stay resilient.